you. Blessings Zulu and Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington on Monday, May 18th, 2015. Thank you for joining us this Monday evening live from Washington. This is Ndimiyake Mwakalielie.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Youth linked to the Movement for Democratic Change led by Morgan Tsvangirai have reportedly clashed over the party's move to boycott the forthcoming parliamentary by-elections.
We're surprised to read the media reports suggesting that there's violence in Bulawayo, that there's a rift in the presidency, where the vice president who doesn't support non-participation.
The Zimbabwe Election Support Network, ZESN, says the just-ended Wedza North by-election has exposed lack of meaningful progress in electoral reforms in Zimbabwe.
People are being forced to vote for Zanzibar, and that is clear because people must assemble at a certain point before they go and vote. People must just come from their homes and they must just go and cast their vote.
And the government is now in the process of harmonizing Zimbabwe's outdated laws with the new constitution, following the gazetting last week of the General Laws Amendment Bill.
Youth linked to the Movement for Democratic Change led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai reportedly clashed in Bulawayo on Saturday following a rally held by the party leader in the city to discourage Zimbabweans from voting in the forthcoming parliamentary by-elections. Mr. Tsvangirai's spokesperson Luke Tamborinyoka was quick to dismiss the reports of the intra-party violence, saying the MDCT leaders' rallies went without interruption. Indications are that the party supporters in Bulawayo are divided over the MDCT's decision not to take part in the forthcoming parliamentary by-elections in any national poll until there are tangible electoral reforms. They fear, they say, that they will lose 5 seats currently up for grabs in a region widely regarded as the MDCT stronghold.
The city has been ravaged by internal squabbles after the election of Gift Banda as provincial chairman was nullified by the High Court following a petition filed by Matson Hlalo. The position was given to Dorcas Siwanda, who was herself ousted early this month. The weekend violence was reportedly instigated by those who are unhappy with the poll boycott and are supported by party vice president Thokozani Kupe. However, Tamborinyoka says there is no rift between Kupe and Tsvangirai.
All I know is that the president was much brilliant to go and explain to the electorate, the decision taken by the party congress, that the party would only contest in elections predicated on reforms. What has only happened is that we were surprised to read the media reports suggesting that there was violence in Bulawayo, that in fact there's a rift in the presidency, where the vice president who doesn't support non-participation, and that they were youth aligned to the vice president who bought President Tsvangirai, which is far from the truth. There's a very good working relationship between the vice president of the party and the president of the party.
But the reports that we have, Mr. Tamborinyoka, also say that the house of the deputy spokesperson, Tavita Kumalo, was also attacked.
I've heard of the attacks on the house of the deputy spokesperson of the party, but I'm not sure about the identity of those who have attacked that house. You must also know that Zanzibar is in the business of trying to create artificial fissures in the MPC. I assume that the deputy president has gone to the police to report on the attack on her house, but I'm not privy as to the identity of the people who attacked the house. All I know is that there was no chaos in the MPC. All I know is that the president of the party was not humiliated as reported in the president in the press. And all I know is that there's no rift between President Tsvangirai and Honorable Thokozani Kupe.
That was Luke Tamborinyoka, MDCT presidential spokesman, on the line with Studio 7's Chris Gande from Harare.
However, chairman of the MDCT Veterans Activist Association, Swithin Chorowodza, tells Studio 7 that there was indeed violence. He says it is suspected that the instigators were supporters of rival factions.
Yes, there was violence at White City Stadium, which was targeted at fellow party members who had helped organize the rally by President Morgan Tsvangirai. And the specific utterances That came out from those who were assaulting fellow party members was that they want Banda people only at White City, and they don't want the Veterans Activist Association. And so there were songs that were sung to denigrate the Veterans Activist Association and people who supported Alderman Shalo.
We understand there were some who were denouncing the party leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, for having said that the party should not take part in the forthcoming by-elections.
No, I think that particular term is wholly untrue. I think what one would say didn't go down well with many reasonable party members was the fact that it seemed a lot of people wanted to show up the factionalism and to put it right in front of cameras, to show it to journalists and the whole world that people within the party are divided, and that should not have really come to the fore.
Swithin Chirowodza is the chairman of the MDCT Veterans Activist Association. He spoke with Studio 7's Chris Gande from Bulawayo.
The Zimbabwe Election Support Network, or ZESNI, says the just-ended Wedza North by-election has exposed the lack of meaningful progress in electoral reforms in Zimbabwe, setting the stage for potential clashes and disputes between ZANU-PF and opposition parties in future. In a statement, ZESNI, which observed the by-election and declared the poll as a peaceful and orderly electoral process, was quick to cite unprocedural activities such as block voting. Under block voting, it says people were being instructed to vote for specific candidates before they visited polling stations. The organization noted that it was worried about the use of controversial voting slips. It said there is need for voter education to allow voters in need of assistance to bring their preferred assistants. It called for the prosecution of those found to be abusing the provision by faking illiteracy for various reasons.
ZESN further called upon the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, to continuously update the voters' roll to eliminate the use of registration slips for voting. The main opposition parties are boycotting national elections, citing most of these problems. According to ZESN, three opposition political parties that contested the Wedza North by-election failed to deploy party agents in polling stations to observe the voting and counting process. Efforts to get a comment from ZEC chairperson Rita Makarao were futile, as her mobile phone was not reachable. Spokesperson Maddock Chiwasa of the opposition National Constitutional Assembly, which contested the by-elections, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the voter intimidation by ZANU-PF is still rampant.
We did observe that in Wedza, and this is clear that ZANU-PF does not respect the people of Zimbabwe. They believe that they must guide them to vote for them. So that resulted into the people who voted for ZANU-PF, they are not necessarily people who believe that ZANU-PF can take forward this country. These are just people who are being forced to vote for ZANU-PF, and that is clear because there's no need why people must assemble at a certain point before they go and vote. People must just come from their homes and they must just go and cast their vote.
But another observation was that you failed to deploy some election agents at some polling stations. Why is this so?
Yeah, you will be aware that as a new opposition political party, we don't have any money. The money that we rely with is money that comes from the membership. So it's not enough for us to even be able to deploy observers. What will actually be happening there is that we just put our trust that since there are other civic organizations like ZESNI who will also be monitoring the same process, we believe that they will then ensure that the process is transparent.
But your critics will say you are failing even to crack 200. Is this not a cause for concern?
No, not at all. Those people, they lack understanding of politics. If you take, for example, other political parties, ZANU-PF was formed. You recall that President Mugabe narrated that history so well. They were just less than 10 people at their house in Ashfield. It means that they did not have even a single person in Wedza, for example.
That was National Constitutional Assembly spokesperson Madok Chiwasa speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Meanwhile, ZANU-PF candidate David Musabayana won the Wedza North by-election after garnering 9,021 votes against 178 polled by Chikukwa Mudzingwa of the NCA, 140 by Tshaona Makara of Transform Zimbabwe, and 88 for Precious Manimanzi of the Freedom Front. The constituency fell vacant following the death of ZANU-PF Simon Musanu. ZANU-PF spokesperson Simon Kayamoyo, in an interview with the Sunday Mail, called the victory impressive and vowed the opposition will be vanquished.
I understand that the bill has been gazetted. I've not yet sight of it, but when you look at the powers of Parliament, you need to appreciate that there are pros and cons. When a Parliament sits as a court of law, the challenge or the danger is that there are times when a parliament itself is composed of our political players. And if you were to look at the case of the Honorable Ray Pelosi, the judgment that was passed on partisan lines. At the end of the day, when it comes to the exercise of our criminal jurisdiction, there may be instances where you might actually prefer to have a situation where a court of law makes such a pronouncement. I want to believe that where a member of parliament is transgressed, there will still be powers to go through the prosecutor general so that any member of parliament who is deemed or perceived who is committed an offence can still be charged, prosecuted, convicted, and appropriately punished by competent authorities.
Do you think that the bill is coming at the right time, considering that you are outnumbered in parliament by the ruling party?
Parliament is still got a role to legislate, making sense in the political convention and the political dynamics. But in terms of timing, really, our only concern is that the general laws amendment bill is really meant to cover relatively minor pieces of legislation.
That was MDCT Chief Whip Innocent Gonese commenting on the government's move of trying to harmonize Zimbabwe's outdated laws with the new constitution following the gazetting last week of the General Laws Amendment Bill. According to the state-controlled Herald newspaper, the bill seeks to amend at least 150 pieces of legislation, including one that bars parliament from jailing people accused of contempt of the August House. In 2005, the then Chimaniman legislator Roy Bennett was sent to jail for assaulting Justice Minister Patrick Chinamasa in Parliament, an incident that was seen by some critics as abuse of parliamentary privileges by the ruling party.
More than 130 Mandela Washington Fellows convened in Johannesburg, South Africa today for the first annual regional conference of alumni and current Mandela Fellows. They were joined by some of Africa's most notable leaders, including the First Lady of Namibia and former President of the Republic of Seychelles. The Mandela Washington Fellowship, launched by U.S. President Barack Obama in 2010 under the banner Young African Leaders Initiative, is now in its fourth round, boasting over 1,000 participants.
Zimbabwe, which recently announced the 2015 fellows, will see 30 participants visit one of the 20 prestigious U.S. universities hosting the participants, followed by a conference in Washington, D.C., hosted by President Obama. The fellows will spend 6 weeks training in the areas of business and entrepreneurship, civic leadership, and public management.
Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Emmanuel Ndlovu, who is a 2014 Mandela Washington Fellowship alumni and advocacy program manager with Bulawayo Agenda.
The purpose of the summit is to provide a platform of interaction for regional fellows from Southern Africa and also to map up and identify issues of concern that sit at the core of the survival of Africans from this region, map up solutions, discuss strategies, for example, issues of xenophobia, issues of trade, issues of technology, and issues of industry.
And how important has this been for you as a Mandela Fellow alumni?
No, it's been quite phenomenal. For example, it gives one an exposure to international perspective thinking, and also allows one to also expand their network of contacts. I mean, in the US, we didn't get much time to really get personal with each other and get to know what we're involved in. But I think this place is quite pivotal in offering us that opportunity. And I think so far we've been utilizing it.
And moving on, of course, these conferences will continue. How much do you think they'll make an impact?
I think it will leave a signature footprint. I mean, considering that last year alone, there were about 50,000 applications, and out of 50,000, 500 were selected. So it still means that there is a greater constellation, you know, of young leaders aspiring to learn, to expose themselves to international thinking perspectives and systems. So it will remain a crucial cog in terms of bringing young people together and exposing them to new thinking and perspectives and ideologies.
Emmanuel Ndlovu is a 2014 inaugural Mandela Washington Fellowship alumni and also the Advocacy Program Manager with Bulawayo Progressive Residents Association. He spoke with Studio 7's Satenda Gumbo from Johannesburg.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
volunteer surgeons bring smiles to 48 Zimbabweans, including young children with cleft lips.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
United States Secretary of State John Kerry expressed confidence Monday that pro-government forces in Iraq would regain control of the provincial capital of Ramadi from Islamic State fighters. Speaking a day after the militants claimed to have seized Ramadi, Kerry said it was a target of opportunity and that he was confident the situation there would be reversed in the days ahead.
The United Nations Security Council has condemned the fighting in two northern states in South Sudan and the repeated violations of a ceasefire agreement the government and rebels signed early last year.
And in Burundi, protesters resumed demonstrations in the streets of Bujumbura against President Nkurunziza's bid to run for a third term in office.
European Union foreign and defense ministers met in Brussels on Monday to establish a military operation in the Mediterranean Sea to stop migrants from trying to reach the bloc in unsafe and overcrowded boats.
And finally, a deaf and blind woman from the southern state of Victoria has become the first Australian to make a telephone call using a device that converts a conversation into Braille. It is part of a world-first trial that will test the technology in Australia and the United States. This is Studio 7 for Zimbabwe, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington.
Volunteer surgeons from the United States under Operation of Hope have brought smiles to the faces of 48 people, including young children, who received free surgeries under the program, which started on Monday last week at Araro Hospital. Operation of Hope teamed up with the University of Zimbabwe College of Health Sciences, Ministry of Health and Zimbabwe Rotary and joined local surgeons to perform free surgeries for cleft lip, cleft palate and craniofacial reconstructive surgeries in the program, which ends Wednesday. A volunteer with the Operation of Hope, Martha Pamire, says the program has been going on very well and received an overwhelming response, with some of the patients now awaiting to have surgeries next year. Pamire speaks to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye about the program.
Everything has been going well. We started on Monday and we are finishing on Wednesday.
How many patients have been operated?
So far we are looking at approximately 47 to 48 patients who have been done.
What advice do you give to parents after the operation is done? I've just spoken to my Natalie, who says she's already feeding her child.
Okay, so the advice we give to the moms is just to make sure that their kids, they don't put any sharp objects on the lip, the repaired lip, or even on the repaired palate, because we need for it to take, in about a week or so. so they just have to keep it clean and very nice.
And when is the next round of operations going to be done?
The next round will be next year in May again. So we'll do our screening on May 15th. And then we'll do our 1 week of surgery.
If there's a person listening out there who wants to participate in this program, what do they do?
So all they have to do is to come to Arari Hospital on May 15th, or even come before May 15th next year, to just ask for more information if they watch on the day, which will be coming back again.
That was a volunteer nurse for Operation of Hope, Martha Pamire, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye from Harare Hospital in Harare.
Studio 7 for Zimbabwe, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 live talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with experts and listeners about alleged conflicts between MDC stalwarts Morgan Tsvangirai and his deputy Thokozani Khupe and internal squabbles in ZANU-PF. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Going now to an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States continues to find new ways to support global entrepreneurship. At a time when the world is more interconnected than ever, said President Barack Obama, we've got unprecedented opportunities to help more people access capital and resources and networks that they need to succeed. Youth around the world are particularly in need of greater opportunities. More than half the world's population is under the age of 30, and in some countries, youth unemployment can exceed 35%. When so many young people don't see a future for themselves, it holds an entire nation back. That's why the United States seeks to train and empower thousands of aspiring entrepreneurs. As part of its Young African Leaders Initiative, the U.S. offers training and grants and online resources and courses and leadership centers to help young entrepreneurs build businesses in Africa. In Southeast Asia, the U.S. has connected young people across the ASEAN countries through the Young Southeast Asian Leaders Initiative. The U.S. has also launched an initiative for young entrepreneurs in the Caribbean and Latin America. All told, the U.S. has set a goal of generating $1 billion in new investment for emerging entrepreneurs worldwide by 2017. Half of this money will go to support young entrepreneurs and women entrepreneurs. The program, known as the Spark Global Entrepreneurship Initiative, will bring together some of the most successful entrepreneurship programs across the government and make sure that they're working with the private sector in ways that allow for long-term sustained success. Some of America's most successful business leaders and innovators are joining this effort. One of those is Julie Hanna, who will use her expertise leading Kiva to increase access to capital around the world. Her project commits to delivering $100 million in crowdfunded loans to 200,000 women and young entrepreneurs across 86 different countries. With the Spark Global Entrepreneurship Initiative, said President Obama, we can make sure that anyone who's got the creativity and drive to work hard, no matter where they're from, what they look like, what their background is, they get a fair shot at pursuing their dreams. And we'll all be better for it.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington. Did you know you can listen to web audio replays of our programs on our website and sign up for newsletters in English, Shona, and Ndebele?
Visit our site at www.studio7news.com. You can also give us feedback by text message. Our number is 1-202-465-0318.
Going back to our health story on free surgeries by Operation of Hope, one of the mothers whose daughter was operated on, who identified herself as Miss Nyangoni, says she is overjoyed by the success.
She's 1 year, 2 months. She's the first born, and she had this problem, firstly, in left palate.
When did you know that she had a problem?
The day I gave birth.
What did the doctors tell you?
They told me that she'll be... the operation will be there in 3 months' time, but we didn't eat.
How did you learn about Operation of Hope?
I read it from newspaper and some of my friends on WhatsApp.
How were you perceived where you live? What did people think when they saw your child?
People look at her as if she's mad or crazy or something like that.
Now that you had the operation today, tell us a little bit about that. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling very happy, and I want to thank the Operation of Hope and for what they did to us.
Tell us, what did they provide for you as a mother? Where do you come from?
I come from Chivu. They provide all shelters, blankets, food, even surgery for free.
So now that your daughter has been operated on, have you been able to feed her, or what is going on?
Yeah, I will be here maybe for only 3 days.
Is she able to eat?
Yeah, she's eating like now.
And what word of advice would you have for other mothers that have children that have the same problem as your child?
I just advise them, if they hear that the operation of hope, because they'll be coming there on May, they come with their children so they can do the operation. Because it's very good.
That was Miss Nyangoni, whose daughter benefited from the free surgeries by Operation of Hope, speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye from Harare.
It's time now for sports, where Michael Kariati tells us, among other things, about the ouster of Zimbabwe Football Association president Cuthbert Dube.
The Zifa boss was thrown out of his seat by the Zifa Council that met at an extraordinary general assembly meeting Saturday and resolved that Dube had failed to execute his duties efficiently. All the 30 Zifa councillors who attended the meeting resolved that Dube had to go. The remaining 30 councillors did not attend the meeting following an instruction from Zifa Chief Executive Officer Jonathan Mashingaidze. The Zifa Council elects the Zifa Board and Zifa Northern Region Secretary Swini Mushonga, who chaired the meeting, said they are empowered by Article 22 of the Zifa Constitution to remove any board member they feel is not working in the interest of the game. Although Studio 7 managed to get in touch with Dube, he said he was in a meeting and promised to come back to us after the meeting, which he did not do. If the situation remains as it is, Dube will not be able to attend the FIFA Congress that is set to elect the FIFA president on May 29th. Dube's vice, Omega Sibanda, has at the moment been appointed acting Zifa boss. However, there are mixed reactions to Dube's departure, with some fans saying he has to go, while others feel the former Premier Medical Aid Society chief executive officer could not execute his plans due to lack of funds. While there were these developments at Zifa, the Warriors were celebrating in South Africa after winning their opening COSAFA Senior Challenge game 2-0 against Mauritius. The Warriors will next play Namibia before rounding off their group games against Swaziland. Premier Soccer League action also took center stage, with Chicken Inn returning to top of the table after a 2-1 win over Highlanders. The win may lead to the firing of Bosso coach Bongani Mafu. Indications that Mafu was fired this morning. He was not reachable for comment.
That was actually Tatenda Gumbo reading a report that was filed by our sports commentator Michael Kariati from Harare. Before we go, a quick recap of our top stories.
Youth linked to the Movement for Democratic Change, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, have reportedly clashed over the party's move to boycott the forthcoming parliamentary by-elections.
And Zesson says the just-ended Wedza North by-election has exposed lack of meaningful progress in electoral reforms in Zimbabwe.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And this is Ndimiake Mokalyelie in Washington.